In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Tamman.
The drive for better public health predictions and outcomes through analysis of health data goes back many years. Now, artificial intelligence is coming into the picture in a bigger way. One place where this is happening, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. For an update, I spoke with the director of the CDC's Office of Public Health Data, Surveillance, and Technology, Dr. Jen Layden.
The OPHDST, the Office of Public Health Data, Surveillance, and Technology, otherwise referred to as the Data Office, is a brand new office at CDC. We were stood up last year as part of the Moving Forward effort with the recognition that as CDC continues to modernize the way we support the work that we do, we needed a data office that was dedicated to leading a public health data strategy. So coordinating across the agency, coordinating and driving a strategy with our public health partners, our jurisdictional partners. So we oversee that data strategy and we work to align the efforts across CDC and across public health to improve a data exchange, improve the use of data, improve the completeness and quality of the data, as well as the way we visualize and get data back out to those that need it.
And maybe give us a sense of the scope and range and even number of data sources, because CDC data just sounds like it must be enormous.
Right. There is a huge number of data systems as well as types of data that we use in public health. So one way to look at it is the most essential data for the public health mission. Our mission in public health is to detect threats, identify novel threats. When we do detect them, identify the source of the infection or the source of exposure, investigate those outbreaks, and then disseminate and get information out to those. So the types of data we rely on are information about new cases of potentially concerning public health threats, data from laboratory testing, vital statistics, birth and mortality data, hospitalization data, emergency room visits data, wastewater testing data. Those are core data sources that are essential for us to identify early warning systems, threats to the public, threats to communities, as well as then have real-time monitoring. So to be able to understand if we have an outbreak of measles, per se, where the cases are occurring, who's at risk for getting exposed, and getting that information out there. There's also data that's needed for longer-term use or to understand what populations are infected or exposed and what the risk factors are. Some of that is based on, more like studies or surveys or population-based surveys where they collect information from interviewing patients and whatnot. So it's a variety of sources of data from clinical settings, from surveys, from testing in environmental places such as the wastewater, as well as other types of data sources that may be indicators of community burden for a variety of conditions.
And I guess, like in so many domains, the more data you have, the more carefully you have to distinguish cause and effect.
Absolutely, right? You could easily say, you see a rise in one condition and, that seems to be happening in this population. But unless you really know the other factors that could be contributing, sometimes we call those confounding variables, things that could also be contributing to the effect, it's hard to know that truly there is that cause and effect relationship. So it's important to understand not just to get data quickly, but to also understand what other data elements or type of data you need to truly understand what is the cause of whatever impact you're seeing or effect you're seeing, as well as identifying the best ways to rapidly pick up those concerning threats or changes in patterns of disease that may signal something new.
And in the CDC context, time is always of the essence, fair to say.
Yep. Absolutely. CDC and public health broadly. So before I came to CDC, I worked at the state and local level. And you think of an individual with measles. We are seeing cases of measles occur in many parts of the country right now. When you have a case of measles, that person who's infected could potentially infect others. And there's things that you can do to prevent that from happening. So the timeliness of that data is critical to ensure that we prevent others becoming ill, others being exposed, especially those that are vulnerable or at risk for more severe disease.
Fair to say, then, that artificial intelligence is coming into the toolkit for CDC to try to identify causes of public health issues and also possible ways to mitigate them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I would look at it in a couple different ways. So there's definitely is great potential for artificial intelligence, AI, machine learning to play a critical role in public health. And you could look at it in the context of automating processes by which we analyze data. So as data is coming in, how do we embed automated processes that can more readily detect a threat, right? Or detect if something is a foodborne outbreak that we need to notify or communicate about. But there's also a way in which AI and machine learning can help to reduce burden and increase efficiencies in the day-to-day work streams. So in public health, we often need to get information out there to the public. We need to develop a quick fact sheet about a disease or whatnot. So thinking of how we can use some of the other novel AI tools to generate products, certainly with oversight and visibility and checking them, that would reduce the burden on day-to-day work streams or operational aspects of what public health does.
And any particular use cases that you're actually pursuing right now?
So there's a wide variety of them. So we've seen the great, interest and excitement of youth across our programs at CDC and across public health. So just a couple that have been used to identify clusters of infections. They've looked at it how one example is with Legionella. Legionella is a disease that people get exposed to from contaminated water, so cooling sites and whatnot. And so they're looking at how they can take the program, how they can take data from available information about where cooling sites are and automate the interpretation of that to identify places that could be at risk for Legionella outbreaks. Just one simple example that's more in the analysis of data. There's been efforts to look at how we can take information and interpret, basic tools about diseases into different languages or condense it into understandable information. So we're seeing a wide variety of what we call use cases and interests. What we're trying to do in the process is ensure that, one, we establish guidance by which programs and scientists can have some basic playbook by which to use such tools. Two, ensuring that people do it safely and securely, recognizing that we don't want to create any risks to de-identification or information sharing that should not be shared. And then three, how to also factor in ethical and bias considerations. Certainly when you're using artificial intelligence as well as any new analytic tool, there's always the potential for introduction of bias or introduction of unintended findings from the data if we don't understand how the tools are working. And so we want to set up, and we have released guidance across the agency that helps guide scientists, help guide program on how to use AI safely and also to evaluate such things as bias and other considerations.
And do a lot of the ideas become generated by the actual experts, say the measles desk, for lack of a better word, or the Legionnaires' disease desk?
That's the hope, right? So certainly it's a mix. One of the things that we find, especially in the growing and increasingly complex space of data and technology, is that it is a multidisciplinary approach. You need folks who understand the disease. You need folks who understand the populations that are infected, and you need folks who understand the technology and the advanced analytics. So I would say it is really a multidisciplinary team that needs to come together to understand what the question is that we're trying to answer, what are the considerations we need to factor in as we understand the data that we're using, and then what are the best tools to help answer that question. So not just using a new tool because it's a new tool, but is it the best tool to answer the question at hand?
And I want to get back to tool and style of AI selection, since there are several styles. But I wanted to ask you also about the data itself, because there's a big privacy concern with medical data coming in from sources that may not even be federal in the first place, because you get state and local data and data from other agencies. And there are well-known strategies for keeping that data anonymous. Do you worry that the AI, or do you have ways to mitigate the fact that AI could, there's always a way to triangulate in on an individual in even anonymized data. Do you worry that AI can accelerate that ability of people that want to get stuff they shouldn't have?
No, so great question. And I think first off to say that the privacy confidentiality is always a primary and a priority consideration. At the federal level at CDC, rarely do we get identifiable patient information. For the work that we are responsible across public health, it's most often de-identified data. We don't know the patient's name or other identifiable information because we don't need to for the purpose of what the question that we have to answer. That's different across different levels of public health practice. But with that, we do need to be mindful that as technologies evolve, that we always have to reevaluate that question of what is identifiable information. To say that the reason we're not going to use a tool is because of that potential, I would look at it as always continuing to say, how do we continue to look at what is truly de-identified as the tools evolve? So the purpose of the guidance that has been shared across the CDC is to help scientists understand that. And as we continue to build out early use cases, doing so in the framework of evaluating it from the context of security, confidentiality, privacy, bias, and ethical considerations to learn from and build out the best practices for using such tools that, in all reality, are going to become part of our future way of working.
Yeah, so really measuring results then would take a team of people or evaluating this. You need your data scientists and your IT people, but you also need subject matter experts to say, well, yeah, I realize it produced this, but this makes no sense in my experience.
Right. No, absolutely. And, I liken it to, I used to practice clinical medicine, and as a clinician, I helped to take care of patients that were undergoing transplants. And when you have a transplant patient, you want a multidisciplinary team. You need the surgeon, right, who's the best at doing the surgery. You need the anesthesiologist. You need the internist. You need the pharmacist. They all play a different role. And so as we think of how we're going to use AI in public health, you want that multidisciplinary team. You want the domain expert. I mean, by that, I mean the subject matter person, the person who understands Legionella in outbreaks. You want the individual who understands the community. You want the individual who understands the tool and the potential biases that could be introduced by using that tool. Bringing that team together to understand how the tool can be used and the considerations and how to do it safely, it really, in my mind, is a team sport.
Dr. Jen Layden, Director of the Office of Public Health Data, Surveillance, and Technology at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to our interview with Dr. Jen Layden, Director of the Office of Public Health Data, Surveillance, and Technology at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Our topic is artificial intelligence and how it's used for analyzing health information and indicators of threats. And how do you design the pathway from test and evaluation to production? Because that's a big leap, I think, for a lot of agencies in AI.
Yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily one answer, but I think part of it is pulling people together, generating the excitement, laying out that framework and continuing to test it, and also recognize that it's an iterative process, right? As we test out use cases and trying to get a range of use cases, whether it's using AI to do advanced analytics on data sources or using it for more operational aspects of the work, doing so in a context, having a wide range of those, and then continuing to build out the framework, testing it, validating it, and then sharing that information. You know, we learn best in the scientific community by sharing best practices, sharing what worked well, what didn't work well, so we can continue to build off of that.
And you mentioned bias, and sometimes bias may not be present or apparent at the start of a program, but as new data keeps applying to an algorithm, you get drift. And drift is a sort of a form of bias from what you wanted your outcomes to be. And how do you make sure that what you designed and launched initially stays in band as the program produces more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, great question. And, you know, perhaps with the introduction and growing use of AI, the introduction of bias could happen at a potentially faster rate than we're used to seeing. But the concept of bias and the concept of you know, what the data and how we interpret it and what it means and what's the bias considerations based on the population you used or the data sets you used are inherent in the scientific process. It's now happening at a more rapid pace, I guess you could say, with introduction of AI. So how we factor that into evaluating for the introduction of biases or the shift in biases, I think will be an important growing field. But that, to me, speaks to also the need to continually have the experts, you know, individuals who are disease experts, individuals who are AI experts, coming together to look at that together.
Let's discuss the generative AI that has come into the scene. And I think there were some early artificial intelligence applications to everything known about, you know, in the literature about a particular disease or something. I think there's been some sobering up as to how to use that. But is generative part of your thinking? And if so, how would it incorporate?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we were actually, we had a great team working on this very early, looking at how we could, what early adoption would look like. There was actually a series of 15 pilots that were run across different centers and in offices across the agency. These were used to help evaluate the type of infrastructure we would need, what type of capabilities we would use, what would be security factors that we'd have to consider. And the variety of these projects or pilots, you know, ranged from, you know, more like programmatic work to more operational work, such as website redesign, evaluating comments back on a protocol or whatnot. So we intentionally want to ensure that we're looking at the use of generative AI, just as other AI tools, across the wide spectrum of public health practices that it could be applied to.
All right. And let's talk about infrastructure for a moment, because, you know, some companies have gotten very big selling graphics processing unit chips, you know, to the cloud service providers. Where does the AI execution tend to reside? I guess that relates to CDC's cloud computing strategy and its general whatever resources you have.
You know, I would say it's evolving. You know, one of the challenges in public health broadly, and that not unique or not new, is bringing in the more advanced analytic capabilities, the workforce expertise and whatnot. So we are seeing that capability grow within our own data office, within our chief informatics officer office, as well as across programs, building up those capabilities. We've also looked at ways to partner with academic and private partners, recognizing that our bandwidth, our capabilities to understand the full spectrum of tools and how they could be used will be slower to build up those capabilities in-house. So how we can partner with experts, either an academic or private, is another way for us to build up the capabilities, our understanding, as well as expertise.
What about the commercial cloud field? A lot of agencies are just using that as the place to try to execute AI programs. Is that part of CDC, or do you go through HHS on that one?
So we have a really robust chief informatics office that has a cloud strategy. We've seen the migration of systems and tools to the cloud, you know, in doing that, also building up enterprise-wide capabilities. So, and they work really closely with their colleagues and peers in across HHS. But that is a we want to ensure, as we continue broadly across data modernization, when it's appropriate, when we can, to build in enterprise-wide capabilities, ideally in that cloud setting.
And as you noted in the beginning, that CDC is dealing with state agencies across the country. They generate a lot of the data. There are private institutions, and even, you know, if it's wastewater and vital statistics, agencies outside of the health complex. Are there models, are there shared approaches that you can shortcut by using that might be originating in some of those partner areas?
Yeah, so great question. Public health data exchange, the ecosystem is really complex, as you mentioned. We have jurisdictions that have their own systems, but there are some systems that are in some ways shared, or they're shared tools. So for one example, the one of the systems that over half of the state jurisdictions use for case investigation is a system that we at CDC help to operate and maintain. There's the syndromic surveillance, which is the surveillance system that looks at the emergency room data. There's a really robust shared governance model that is used across jurisdictions to support the development in use and sharing of tools, ways to look at data. So in my mind, you know, public health, the more we can build up enterprise-wide tools that can be used and leveraged appropriately is one step that we need to continue to take and to grow, but then also sharing the best practices.
Just to summarize then, fair to say, though, that AI is in some ways changing how public health is monitored, watched, responded to in general.
Yes, and we have a long way to go. You know, I'd say we're very much at the beginning stages. You know, public health generally has fewer resources than other professions. And so the introduction of it, we are learning as we go. And I think definitely want to ensure we're doing it in a way that is secure, understands the framework, understands the considerations that are important as these tools get implemented. And also doing so to ensure that we are using the tools that are best suited to answer the question. So not just using a tool because it's the shiny new tool, but using the tool because it's what's needed to help answer a question or to make our work streams more efficient, automated, and improve what we in public health have the mission to carry forward.
Dr. Jen Layden, Director of the Office of Public Health Data, Surveillance, and Technology at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at Maximus.com/federal.